Let me bring this closer to home. Two Senate primaries on Tuesday produced very different kinds of results. In Kansas, Pastor Adam Hamilton won the Democratic nomination out of an 11-candidate field. Hamilton leads Resurrection United Methodist Church, which with roughly 22,000 members is one of the largest congregations in the United States. He'll face Republican incumbent Roger Marshall in November in a state that hasn't sent a Democrat to the Senate since 1932. That's not a typo, 1932, 94 years ago.
What's interesting about Hamilton isn't just that he won. It's who he is. A megachurch pastor winning a Democratic primary in Kansas suggests the party is actively trying to reach voters it has written off for decades. Hamilton has positioned himself as a moderate who can talk to rural voters on economic terms without alienating the party's base. Whether that actually works in a general election in Kansas is a serious question. But the strategy itself represents a genuine departure from how Democrats have approached red state Senate races.
Michigan is the more consequential race in terms of national implications, and it's still undecided this morning. Michigan has been a genuine presidential swing state, and the Democratic primary there reflects a coalition under real tension: labor voters, Arab American communities who've been deeply alienated by the party's Gaza positions, and more progressive urban voters who have distinct priorities from the suburban moderates the party needs. A very close primary in Michigan often signals a general election coalition that's fragile in specific ways.
The GOP side of the Capitol had its own drama. Republican senators blocked Pete Hegseth's pick for Army Chief of Staff, which is notable because it represents members of the president's own party drawing a line on military appointments. The Army Chief of Staff role is specifically about professional military leadership, institutional knowledge, joint operations planning, readiness across all theaters. When Republican senators, who've generally been quite deferential to this administration, push back on a specific military appointment, it suggests the concern about readiness isn't purely partisan.
Senator Alex Padilla introduced legislation Tuesday to ban presidents from selling expedited access to their statements. That's a direct response to Trump's paid early access post-service, where subscribers get official statements before the general public. Padilla's argument is that there's a fundamental problem with a sitting president monetizing access to government communications. That's a genuinely novel constitutional argument, and it's not obvious courts would agree with it. But the fact that someone is trying to legislate it suggests the practice is being taken seriously as a precedent concern.
The FAA investigation into the Marine One incident is one of those stories that seems minor until you think about what it represents. Controllers at Reagan National failed to halt commercial flights as required when the presidential helicopter departed the White House on Tuesday. The protocol exists because presidential helicopter routes and commercial approach paths to Reagan can intersect in ways that create real safety risk. The fact that the protocol lapsed, regardless of whether anything bad actually happened, is exactly the kind of near miss that safety regulators track, because near misses are how aviation learns before accidents occur.
And then Trump ordering the White House helipad redone over a slope issue connects directly to that story. The timing is either a coincidence or it's not, but either way, it points to infrastructure at one of the most carefully managed facilities in the world needing attention. Reagan National's airspace is among the most restricted and most complex in the country, and the Marine One protocols exist for good reason.
The judge blocking Trump's ban on voter registration at citizenship ceremonies is the kind of judicial action that matters procedurally more than it might seem. Citizenship ceremonies have been a standard venue for voter registration drives for decades. It's a natural moment when new Americans are engaged and present. The administration argued the ban was about keeping political activity out of federal ceremonies. The judge found that reasoning insufficient to override long-standing practice. That's now potentially heading up the appellate chain.
The McConnell staff story: $486,000 in taxpayer-funded salaries paid to his team during his 50-day absence is going to be a durable talking point regardless of which side of the aisle raises it. The substantive question it raises is about what taxpayers are funding when a senator is absent for 7 weeks. McConnell's office would argue that Senate offices don't pause, staff continue constituent services, legislative work, and committee responsibilities. Critics argue that the numbers attached to a specific name and a specific absence make the abstract complaint concrete.
The Jeanine Pirro story, keeping her job after a tense Oval Office confrontation with Trump over the reflecting pool case, is a window into how personnel decisions get made in this administration. The tense clash framing suggests the outcome wasn't predetermined, and that Pirro's willingness to push back in person was itself part of what preserved her position. It's an unusual management dynamic for any organization, let alone one running the executive branch of the federal government.